Welcome to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. I am your host, Sherry Yuen Hunter. Here, we speak with amazing guests to make the world a better place by helping people heal from intergenerational trauma. Sandwich parents are in between the way we got parented and the way we now want to parent our children.
Hello, Anna from Southern California.
Woohoo!
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to see you. I'm so excited. I'm really looking forward to our talk today.
Me too.
So welcome, welcome to Sandwich Parenting. My first question, as is often my first question, is question of origin. So you are a money coach. I've looked over your site. I'm kind of interested in what you do. It sounds really cool. But first, I would actually like to have you share with our listeners how you got here. Why are you so good with money?
That's a very loaded question. Am I good with money?
Are you?
I do love for some reason talking about money and figuring out the best ways to help my families, my clients, the people that are important to me in my life with money. And that really did start from a very young age. I was probably handed the reins to our family checkbook. Wow. Really unseasonably early. And I was probably just, I wasn't even 10 yet. You know, I was in elementary school and my parents were going through a lot of difficulty in not only my dad being sick, he just stopped working at some point. And so we were financially on the edge for a while and accumulated a lot of debt. And at some point, even though I was the younger child, he thought that I should be interested with learning about all the debts that we had piled up and how he was doing credit card transfers and balance transfers to manage everything. And maybe it was because I was interested too. Like I was naturally interested in what my family was stressed about. And I wanted to try to fix it.
Right.
So I found out very early what credit card debt does to families.
20%. Yeah.
The high interest rate costs and the never ending shuffle that a lot of families go through. And I think a lot of immigrants come to America and they don't really understand. You know, we didn't really understand the system that well. And at the same time, we were trying to work with it to get as much financial support as we could. So I don't think that we were, you know, we weren't victims, I would say, of the system, like a lot of people are of the credit system. But it did enable us to, in a way, be very irresponsible. So I just had always seen the financial stress that we were under and wanted to help my family to start out with. And so I studied business in undergrad as well as computer science. And then I went on Wall Street to figure out why investment banks and Wall Street firms were able to just continuously make so much money. So it's a combination of curiosity and practicality of trying to make the money that I could use to support my family on an ongoing basis and remove that sense of stress and shame that we had surrounding money.
And that brought you to not only possessing these skills, but somehow you turned it into helping others.
I was thinking about this today, actually, and I think culturally, you know, obviously there's a huge amount of respect that we're expected to have for elders and for our families. And so in that sense, I've always tried to please my parents. And that's very common in really any culture, right?
More so in Asian Chinese, for sure. But yes. Yeah.
And you want your parents to approve of you. And this was probably, learning about finance was probably one of those ways. for me to feel like I was getting more approval and more attention as well. You know, and looking at all the battles that we were fighting, I know that I was important to my parents, but this battle with finances was probably the most important.
It was a matter of survival too, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And so from that time, I just had this drive, and I said to myself, you know, you need to be the one to come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. And I think that is how I approach a lot of things in my life. It is kind of like putting the weight of the world on my shoulders, though. So that's what my sister has said about me. And so over the years, I've had to learn how to draw more boundaries. And, you know, with my own family, now I have two kids and actually another on the way.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness. Woo, three kids.
It's going to be pure chaos. But
when you have more kids than you have hands,
mm-hmm.
I would say chaos is absolutely going to be part of it.
You got to embrace the chaos.
Embrace it.
Exactly. I think after working on a trading floor for a decade, I just have always liked having a lot of things going on at once. I used to call it professional ADD. Because I just want to be involved in a lot of different projects and have a different responsibilities and be excited by a lot of different things. And whether or not that's really a great idea is another story, but it works for me. And so I do, you know, I do help clients, but I also am an investor. I run a financially focused copywriting business, and I'm really trying to build overall a passive income, if possible, passive income lifestyle mm-hmm. that is location independent and can help me reach my personal goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people want that right now. So I do try to help guide, you know, young professionals and anybody who's really looking down that path.
I would say that there's been a confluence of a number of things, like with a pandemic and, you know, being mm-hmm. stuck at home. But secondly, the technology that I know I didn't have when I was young, you know, like
exactly.
I like what technology to do this, to mm-hmm. to interview somebody from Southern California and have a podcast, you know, like this is not something I would have been able to do 20 years ago. So I think with all the technology that's available and all the companies that are supporting operational tasks mm-hmm. for people to do exactly as you say, which is, you know, be location independent in your income creation.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I actually say, you know, obviously there's a lot of security that comes with working for a big company.
Yes.
And insurance, health insurance is a big deal.
That's, I know.
In the US.
Yeah. But in Canada too. Yeah. I mean, private insurance. We have, mm-hmm. we have regular insurance, but yes, it's the private mm-hmm. insurance. Yeah. Dental, for example.
Yeah. So a lot of people get stuck in this treadmill where they're yes. going to work and doing the same thing for 20, 30 years. And that was the path that our parents took.
Completely, completely.
And now it's like, there's almost no excuse. I would say that to not be able to design your own life and try to figure out the best, you know, not only funding sources for yourself, but also ways to get yourself to the next level and try to become better at all the things that you want to be.
It sounds like a fantasy, you know?
It does. I think when we were young, it probably was.
But you see people doing it now, though. There are people mm-hmm. actually living like this, which mm-hmm. is absolutely amazing. So you mm-hmm. mentioned that you have 2.5 kids. And I'm kind of curious, and we're jumping around a little bit, but I do want to talk about this because it's interesting to me. What is the difference between how you were parented and how you choose to parent your children now?
I mean, there's massive differences in at least the way theoretically I want to parent. In practice, I think I could always be better. But when I was growing up, my parents had a very fixed mindset, you know, and this is what boys do. This is what girls do. This is what, you know, people who are smart do. And
oh, big one.
This, I definitely got out of the gates early. Like I was very good in school and really reinforced by the cycle of being told I was smart, and definitely makes you not want to take risks and not want to rock the boat. Mm. And that was reinforced by my parents all along during my education. And I kind of took it at the time. I feel like I was brainwashed in some sense. I mean, we're all brainwashed in some way.
Totally all brainwashed. I agree. Yeah.
It's like when we're growing up, we're also in this little internship of how we think family life should be. And so you carry that with you, even when you have your own kids, whether you want to, or whether you like to or not.
Totally. Totally.
So you have to make a very, very hard choice sometimes of not wanting to go with your instinct or your pre-programming to say, yell at your kid when they're not doing exactly what you're saying.
It's exactly that. That's literally what I work with most of my clients. Absolutely. It's that unconsciously inherited parenting playbook mm-hmm. that we got from society, from culture, from the previous generation when they were so focused on survival. Like everything was about survival.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's probably nothing more frustrating than arguing with a little miniature version of yourself. you know what's coming.
Oh my gosh.
You can kind of even halfway script it in your head, and they still do manage to surprise you. So, you know, I really try to be a lot more communicative, a lot more open. And that has to do with my more kind of westernized upbringing as well. The fact that I grew up in the States and still had exposure to a lot of the, I generally say more Western ways of parenting that we're more open and really focus more on maybe even being friends with your kid and trying to have a good relationship with them. Mm. I think Chinese culture is really, you know, the opposite of that. You're not trying to be your kid's friend.
Not at all.
You don't want to be your kid's friend because you need to force them to go to piano and violin lessons and then play tennis and get into a great school. And I still have that in the back of my head. I still think about it a lot.
Yeah, it's hard not to, right? Because mm-hmm. this is a competitive world at the end of the day. I mean, at the end of the day, our kids are still going out into the real world. And so we worry that we're not providing them the tools to go out and do things, right? But if I were to use the analogy of money, it's not like you expect them to know how to deal with money when they're four. You may introduce concepts, you may, you know, give them tiny amounts of allowances, or you may have conversations with them. Oh, well, if you save up instead of the, you know, using your $10, you know, when the next time your birthday rolls around and you have money, you know, you can get something. Like you explain things to them at a age appropriate, you know, manner. And I think that right now the world keeps trying to push things younger and younger and younger. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you know, by two, you should know if they can be a professional soccer player. And mm-hmm. if you have a piano prodigy on your hand, you know, you've got to start music lessons at 6 months. Like it's this craziness where, you know, you start investing in them, but is it really mm-hmm. actually giving them the skills that they need to excel, if that's what they indeed want to do in the future? And not all kids are the same. Not all kids perform in the same way, and their smarts mm-hmm. are in different ways as well.
Yeah, I think as parents, we just really want to give our kids options. But at the same time, those have to be curated and, you know, balanced with all the other needs in our lives. And so that it's really challenging to figure out whether to push your kids to, you know, be more learning oriented rather than just wanting to like sit on the couch and watch Pokemon, which is what my daughter likes to do.
But you know, they learn a lot. Like, I didn't realize this, but they actually learn a lot from some of these shows. You know, my son was telling me, oh yeah, so, you know, pyramid schemes. And I was like, huh, pyramid schemes? Yeah, because he saw it on Teen Titans Go. Okay. Like, it actually described it. It showed the ramifications. And I was like, you mean, so you're not just wasting your time when you're watching Teen Titans Go?
Yes.
I know. Yes, I'm not a bad parent.
Productive, yeah. Productive TV watching is productive. The best way to go.
Oh, I love that. Productive TV watching. That's so funny. I mean, not everything they watch is great. As we're talking about investing in our kids and wanting them to, you know, be successful in the future, money and finances. This is a biggie that parents worry about a lot when it comes to supporting the next generation. What themes do you often see in your clients who are parents?
You know, I think that also really depends on cultural programming, how much people think about what kind of estate they want to leave, or there's still a lot of focus on the here and now, I'd say. Like, what can I do now for my kids to put them through private schools, or, you know, give them piano, violin lessons? And a lot of those things are very costly. So
very, yeah.
I think that's definitely the first instinct that parents have these days, is how can I deal with these rising costs right now? And that's what, you know, that's what they're focused on in providing for the next generation. So every financial decision does have some kind of logical basis that you can lay down, right? You can usually put down some numbers, look into your finances, and then actually lay out different options for yourself. And so I think that's also what I like about it, that you can fall back on having pretty good rationale for whatever you choose. I mean, there's actually, you know, money seems like it should be very black and white. And sometimes it is. Like, sometimes you really shouldn't be taking on hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. But it also becomes a very psychological game as well. Like, what is, what do you really prioritize in your life? You know, in your child's needs versus maybe even your own. Do you want to go back to school, or do you want to learn a new instrument? And you're just setting it aside because you think that the focus right now should be on your children. Ooh. And is that the right path to take?
That's interesting. So, like, swimming lessons for my kids versus
swimming for me.
For me. or singing lessons for me.
Absolutely. And as a parent, especially new parents, parents of any age are going to probably, and I'm going to generalize here, probably default to focusing on their kid first because, oh, they're, you know, they're the young ones with promise and so much potential. And I do have to remind people sometimes, look, you are living your life and you are the one responsible for your own needs and your self-care. And one else is going to be picking up the pieces. But
if you've raised
someone else is going to have to pick up the pieces if you're not taking care of yourself.
I was just going to add, sorry to interrupt, but I was just going to add that, you know, if you train your kids well enough in Chinese filial piety, they will support you in your old age.
Yeah, maybe that's one thing I should get started on. But you see that a lot with the sandwich parenting generation, where you don't want to burden your kids. And so you don't do that. but you're also responsible for your parents and worried about them and taking care of them. Mm. And so that is one of the major conflicts and internal conflicts sometimes for parents who are trying to figure out what their real priorities are. And you do have to choose. So it's not easy. It's more of a personal process that you need to go through. Sometimes it helps to have somebody to bounce ideas off of and actually come up with a working solution with. But it's definitely a challenge.
I was going to say that you said something quite interesting about, money seems like it should be black and white, but really it's incredibly tied to your goals, your values. And you said, it's actually quite emotional. Like there are lots Absolutely. Of decisions, yeah, that are more emotional than they are black and white. Let's say you have 10 priorities and they're all urgent and they're all number one.
Right? Usually, we are in a culture where we want it all. We think we can have it all. And you think that everything is the most important. And when push comes to shove, you still want all 10 things piled up on top of each other. Mm. And it's okay to try, it's okay to try to go for a lot of different goals. I think trying to figure out where there's overlap or where there may be some kind of, it's going to sound very businessy, but synergies between what you're going for and making sure that you're not being, first of all, you need to be true to yourself, right? You're not trying to live out someone else's dreams, like your parents' dreams about where you should be money-wise.
Yeah.
You really have to be very clear about what you actually want. And that takes years to maybe even figure out or to work through, because we still have all this programming from everybody else that we've grown up with. And we think we need to have X amount by a certain time, or that's something we've convinced ourselves of. We need to feel, we can only feel secure when we've achieved a certain level of, say, assets. And so being really, really honest with yourself is hard to do.
Well, it was okay. So, it's how you just phrase that, where you have to be clear about what your assumptions are and what expectations you have set. The way you said that reminds me that a lot of times we really do think about those expectations as must do without actually questioning it. Like I think about, do you remember a long time ago when it was like Freedom 55? Like there's this whole, thing about, oh yeah, you want to have freedom and you want to retire at 55.
Mm.
Like there was this whole thing.
Somebody's marketing ploy, probably.
I'm sure it was somebody's marketing ploy, but boy, is that a lot of pressure, to say that, well, so now the expectation is that you should be able to retire comfortably at 55. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, a lot of people are still paying off their mortgage. And those of us that married late still have very young kids, right?
It's really a matter of knowing, kind of trying to get to know who you are. I think we spend our lives working on that. Mm. And that's not something that's a really big focus in Chinese culture. But
that's true.
It is really the ultimate goal, right? To understand yourself, to know thyself, and to be able to see how that aligns with everything else in your life. So I think a lot of people assume an identity, and it's, very popular to be an individual and know what you like and be very expressive about it. But do a lot of people really kind of sit down and just internally think about if that's what makes them happy? And can you also write down, in 5-10 years, what do you think would make you happy? I mean, this is all very hard to do on your own. It's like,
very,
you might have a plan to do that. You may think, oh, that sounds great, but not actually do it.
And I think a lot of people do that, where you kind of park it and kind of say, okay, well, you know, I've thought about it, but mm-hmm. did you break it down into tasks? Did you break it down mm-hmm. into timelines? Did you break it down into daily decisions? You know, like, are you really working towards those goals? And it's very hard work. It's very mm-hmm. hard work to be thinking about those things. So mm-hmm. that's, yeah. So is that what you do with your clients too? Like, you actually go into these questions?
Absolutely. I think trying to be proactive about parts of your life that you've kind of left to function on its own is definitely something that we really need coaches for. Like, that's what we do in the gym when doing the same workout over and over again and not getting different results. You wonder why. I mean, we only have, all of us only have so much willpower at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So it's really trying to trigger that and help move that along. That's important.
I like what you said about that. We all need it. It is like working out, or it is like wellness coaches, you know, who, mm-hmm. because if you're not thinking about what you're eating, or if you're not thinking about how you're sleeping, you know, or you're not thinking about all the little habits that add up to your mm-hmm. wellness, in the same way financially, if you're not thinking about these things, your end result is not necessarily at all going to be what you were sort of vaguely hoping.
Right.
That's a good point.
I think with kids also, really starting to talk to them from a young age about money fairly openly, you know, and it doesn't have to be complex. You don't have to go into every single detail. And there's commonly going to be some information withheld. You know, you don't need to teach them how to use your credit card yet, right?
Oh, they love credit cards.
Although they could probably figure it out themselves. It's so easy.
I've heard horror stories of parents, you know, with, you know, how did I get $10,000 on my credit card from Fortnite or Minecraft, or, you know, like whatever the kids are using, and just taking their credit cards. I've heard horror stories.
Mm-hmm, my friend's 2-year-old bought her a Roomba somehow.
That's hilarious. They pressed the button.
A gift. Turned out to be from herself.
It was from herself. Mm-hmm. That's so funny. So thinking about that relationship, you know, that you have with your child and, you know, getting them involved, I love that you and your daughter have a podcast teaching Chinese. So that's so cool. That is so cool. And this is coming from a mom who I actually did end up giving up. I have slight guilt and I have slight rebellion as I say this, but I did end up giving up teaching my kids Chinese. So it's very mm-hmm. exciting to hear what you're doing. And I want you to tell us more. Like, how did that happen? What are you doing?
I know exactly how you feel, because there's always so much guilt wrapped up into, you know, not spending the time or not teaching your child Chinese. And it's really hard as a second, third generation parent. And maybe, you know, for example, my home is not a Chinese speaking household, because my husband is not Chinese. And
neither is mine. Yeah.
Yeah. That adds another layer of complexity.
Huge.
And then you feel like, as the Chinese speaking parent, you feel so much responsibility and so much pressure. And it's not an easy language to teach.
No, it's actually not. I mean, they know how to they know how to say shuaya, you know, and they know how to say pingguo, and that's about mm-hmm. it, really.
Hey, that's something, right? And you have to applaud that. Yeah. So my mom is actually she was a Chinese literature teacher.
Ooh, very cool. So
professionally, she has always been there for me and also given me a lot of pressure to teach my own kids and talk to them in Chinese. So obviously that's where a lot of it comes from as well.
What a fine line between support and pressure. Anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, I still have that drive to want to be productive with my kids. And
I know. I hear you.
And it's something that I just wanted to make really fun. And trying to force your kid to speak a language that they don't normally have to speak isn't the exact opposite. And I can totally understand why people want to just give up and not have that be a source of tension in their lives.
Yes, that's so true. You really do understand that. Yeah, completely.
So I wanted a way to connect with my daughter, but also I wanted to show other families that, you know, a little bit of exposure is okay and it's better than none. And it's a lot of parents also worry about code switching, which is mixing languages, like, oh, especially when their kids are young and they speak one sentence, but there's Chinese and English mixed into it. And there's actually been research done that shows that that's actually a sign of proficiency in both languages, right? And it's not a bad thing at all for someone to be able to use both languages. They're using the most appropriate word in that situation, and doesn't mean they're going to grow up and be speaking a mixed sentence.
Chinglish to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And I think discouraging that at a young age is something that a lot of parents instinctually do, especially when they're immigrants. And it's not, it's really not a bad thing. So I'm taking a quite different approach to this podcast. I do have bilingual episodes. And so I have a separate companion Chinese episode and a companion English episode. And then I do a little bit of direct translation in the episodes.
Very cool.
My audience has told me that they enjoy that because some of the, you know, some of the kids need some contextual references, and it's okay not to be in this completely immersive environment all the time. So I wanted to show people that that's okay. And then also I think as we progress, you know, we can have some experiences that are more immersive, but still give children the tools, and parents that are trying to learn or trying to pick it back up again, the tools to learn Chinese and have fun with it. So that's the main goal. I actually really want to have more children, not just my own, on the episode, and maybe even parents at some point. So we would have other kids practicing how to speak Chinese. And telling stories on the show also.
Well, I'll volunteer me and my two boys. Yeah. My 14-year-old, because we didn't manage to get around to Chinese, he now
No shame.
He decided to pick up Chinese using Duolingo. So he just started doing that. And he's like, mommy, 你今天忙吗?
That's great.
So you'll knock on my door and come in and just go, you busy today? And it's like, wow, you know, you figured that out. I did have a lot of guilt for a very long time. But you nailed it on the head, because after a full day of work, you know, coming home, I literally only had, you know, a couple hours with them before I had to do, you know, boo, bed, bath, you know, book, and then put them to bed. And doing all of that in Chinese when English is actually the language where I more fully express myself was really hard, you know. And I did do that for a while, but after a while it just felt like I wasn't fully being me with them, or inclusive of my husband, actually. That was the other piece. So, you know, I did try sending them to Chinese school. I did, you know, do a few things here and there. And finally, I just said, you know, this is causing a lot of angst for us and our family at this point in our lives. And so I had to call it off, but with the caveat that I said, look, you know, I hope that you'll all want to learn Chinese at some point in time. I will support you in how to do that, you know, if we can. And so, yeah, so now my son, like after years of, you know, not touching Chinese at all, is going back to it. Yeah. And that was self, you know, absolutely. It was a self-motivated activity. So that I felt very good about that. You know, his Chinese isn't as good as his cousins, but whatever, right? Like they can still communicate in English.
And self-motivation is huge. That's something that's very difficult to generate, right? Like to force on your child. And you hear all these stories about kids hating Chinese school.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, a lot will come back and say, oh, you know, in the end, it was good for me. But was it worth all that pain and angst? You know, that's a decision for every family.
Completely.
But
completely.
Now there's a lot more tools that you can learn Chinese online through individual tutors, and
that's true.
Try to customize it. And I feel like there's so much more digital information and entertainment in Chinese. And so
that's true.
It's really more about trying to get them to feel like it's fun and interesting and to generate that self-motivation. And it's not going to be smooth sailing every single time. Like my, you know, I'm trying to do weekly episodes, but my daughter has other, you know, she has things going on.
Her schedule full, man.
And we don't put her in much, but she says, I'm busy, Mom. I'm busy. So we've had moments where I had to go back and explain to her really why we were doing this. Yeah. And I would show her, I would actually show her that there is research. This is why Mommy wants to do this. Okay, I understand where you're coming from, but there's research that shows that your brain grows and your brain expands. And then she would maybe think, oh, that's kind of cool. But it and still then, goes all back to her, right? Still goes all back to your kid and whether they're going to push through or not.
Yeah. And well, like you said, they're not growing up in an environment where Chinese is necessary to survive. It's not an environment where you walk down the streets and you have to read the language in order to buy something that you want. Like it's not in the environment. But if they somehow click, you know, as in you're telling her about the research, you're having fun, she can see other kids learning, right? Like it will come together in a way that makes sense. So that's amazing. Congratulations on that. I can't wait to get the link and put it up when we post this up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we're nearing the end of our time together, I was going to ask you, or I am going to ask you, if you could give one piece of advice to parents, given your experience money-wise, given your experience doing podcasts with your daughter, parenting differently than you were parented, what's the one piece of advice you would give to other parents?
And I'm going to take this quote from Byron Katie, who said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but reality is kinder than the stories that we tell ourselves. And I have to constantly remind myself that I'm a product of what I'm telling myself in the moment and what I believe. And that is not what everybody else believes. And it's not what everyone else knows either. And so we get caught up in these struggles, these internal struggles, because we are thinking about our perspective, even if we're trying not to. I mean, we're still biased in some way. And we are making up a story. And this applies to relationships too, right? Our spousal relationships, our relationships with our kids. We get so much more triggered when we assign this extra meaning that's coming from our own brains to something that's going on. And you can tell by looking at different situations where you aren't triggered by something, right? Comparing something you really don't care about, you know, that doesn't matter as much to you, to something that really does. What is the difference there? So I'd say really just being aware of that, first of all, the stories that we're making up for ourselves, because with that foundation, you know that you can also change them. Maybe slowly, but you do have the ability to change some of your expectations and even change your reality in some way.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much for that, Anna.
Thank you. I love that you're giving parents and coaches and people all over the world a voice and really trying to bring issues to light that we don't necessarily think about day to day.
We really don't. We really mm-hmm. don't, but we should when we have time. Mm-hmm. And I love what you're doing. I'm a big fan of your work, and I look forward to talking again.
Yeah, definitely. Big fan as well. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. I hope, like me, you've learned something new that will help you along with your parenting journey. If you wish, you can always connect with me at www.sandwichparenting.com.